The Torah content from now through Pesach has been sponsored by the Kofsky family in loving memory of Adira, who loved big ideas and asking big questions. Hello, I'm Rabbi Matt Schneeweis, and this is the Stoic Jew podcast, where we explore the relationship between Judaism and Stoicism. If you've been following this podcast lately, you may have noticed that I haven't published an episode in around 2 weeks. And the reason for that is the same reason as always, podcaster's block. And the type of podcaster's block is also the same type as always, which is that it's not that I don't have ideas for episodes. It's that I have tons of ideas and tons of specific ideas, but that I've been putting too much pressure on myself to produce the perfect episode to embody these ideas. And that pressure has prevented me from even attempting to make an episode. In this case, the pressure comes from two sources. The first is that I had wanted to make a Pesach episode, like I did last year. And in fact, I was looking for the episode last year and realized I didn't put Pesach in the title. So some might not know about it. I'll include it in the show notes. But anyway, I wanted to make an episode about the Stoic view of freedom versus the Jewish idea of freedom. Okay. And that's kind of a daunting task. And I thought about it a lot and came up with different ideas. But again, the pressure was too much, and I let other projects take precedence. The other source of the pressure only came up last week when I reread Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. And when I say reread, I mean the last time I read this was when I was in high school, before I really knew anything about Judaism or Stoicism. So when I read this book, I had lots of thoughts this time around. And you know, I wanted to incorporate that into this Pesach episode because the themes are very, you know, very, they overlap each other, or they are synonymous, you know, the idea of true human freedom. So these two pressures kind of stewed in my mind, and I just pushed it off and pushed it off and pushed it off. And now we are the day before Erev Pesach, and I feel like I have to just record, and whatever happens, happens. So let me tell you what I got from Man's Search for Meaning this time around. It is an amazingly deep and rich book, and there's no way that I'm going to really paraphrase everything that I thought. But for the purposes of this podcast, I could not help but notice how many ideas of Stoicism were present in Viktor Frankl's words. For example, you know, Viktor Frankl coined this term logotherapy and this whole approach to psychotherapy. Logotherapy coming from the word logos, which translates to meaning. And his whole therapy involves helping a person to cultivate their, or to discover really the meaning that that their life revolves around, and then to use that to navigate their way through life's vicissitudes. So in the section of part two entitled The Essence of Existence, Frankl says what he identifies as the, quote, categorical imperative of logotherapy, and he formulates it as follows. He says, you must, quote, live as if you were living already for the second time, and as if you acted the first time as wrongly as you were Live as if you were living already for the second time, and as if you acted the first time as wrongly as you are about to act now. Now, that's a little bit of a cumbersome thing to say, so let me tell you what I associated to, which was Marcus Aurelius in Meditation 756, where he says, imagine you were now dead or had not lived before this moment. Now, view the rest of your life as a bonus and live it as nature directs. And I made an episode about that, which I'll link in the show notes. Another parallel between Man's Search for Meaning and Stoicism is Frankl's statement, and this is one of his main ideas, which is, quote, everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way. My own personal favorite version of that statement is actually not from Man's Search for Meaning, but is attributed to Viktor Frankl, and that quote says, between stimulus and response lies a space. In that space lie our freedom and our power to choose a response. In our response lies our growth and our happiness. And that really is the essence of Stoicism, especially Epictetus' Stoicism, which revolves around identifying what's in your control and what's not, realizing that almost everything that we consider to be ours is really not ours. And the only thing that really truly is ours is our ability to choose and to make the most of the circumstances that we've been given. So, when I was reading this and thinking about these parallels, then I, even though intellectually these ideas are shared by Frankl and by the Stoics, I couldn't help but notice that there is a different quality added to these ideas when you read them in the context of man's search for meaning, because Viktor Frankl is not just talking about these things from an abstract theoretical perspective. He lived these ideas. In fact, these ideas emerged from his experience in the concentration camps. And I think that this is actually what makes Epictetus's Stoicism different from the other Stoics. You know, Seneca was a prominent figure in Rome. Marcus Aurelius was the emperor of Rome at its height. And not to say that these that their ideas lacked any sort of reality. I mean, obviously they lived according to these ideas also, but certain aspects of their ideas and their teachings only Epictetus had, because Epictetus was a slave. He was born and raised a slave and was only given his freedom at a much later time in life. And, you know, there are stories and legends about him. The most famous one is that he walked with a limp throughout his whole life. And the story is that his master, who often flew into rages, was mad at him or was punishing him, and started twisting his leg. And Epictetus, again, this is in the story version, Epictetus calmly said, "If you continue to twist my leg, then you'll break it." And he was saying this kind of, you know, to warn his master that you're going to disable one of your able-bodied servants. And sure enough, the master continued twisting his leg and then broke it. And Epictetus said, "See, I told you." And so the interesting thing about Epictetus is that when he writes about oppression and slavery and torture, then it's different. You get a different sense, or at least you should get a different sense from it than you would from Seneca or Marcus Aurelius talking about the same topics, because Epictetus lived the life of a slave, whereas Seneca and Marcus Aurelius did not. And there's another example of this in Man's Search for Meaning. Frankl was a correspondent with Sigmund Freud before the war and was a great admirer of his, even though he disagreed with many of his ideas. So at the very end of the book, then here I'll just read from the book itself. It says, and this is Frankl writing, he says, "Sigmund Freud once asserted, 'Let one attempt to expose a number of the most diverse people uniformly to hunger. With the increase of the imperative urge of hunger, all individual differences will blur, and in their stead will appear the uniform expression of the one unstilled urge.'" End quote from Freud. Okay, so Frankl says, "Thank heaven Sigmund Freud was spared knowing the concentration camps from the inside. His subjects lay on a couch designed in the plush style of Victorian culture, not in the filth of Auschwitz. There, the, quote, individual differences did not blur, but on the contrary, people became more different. People unmasked themselves, both the swine and the saints. And today you need no longer hesitate to use the word saints." Okay, fine. It goes on to another point there. But his point is that Freud, like Marcus Aurelius and Seneca, was speculating and theorizing from the comfort of his elevated position. And whereas Frankl and Epictetus really were living these ideas or discovering these ideas in the gritty reality of being in the most oppressive states that the human being can imagine. So that's why, as much as I criticize Epictetus in this this podcast, I do think that his words merit a different level of I won't call it scrutiny. I would say that, you know, taking, and again, I don't want to imply that Marcus Aurelius and Seneca shouldn't be taken seriously, but I just do think that there's a difference between the ideas that are expressed by those who lived them fully under the harshest circumstances, and the ideas of people who were arriving at them through speculation and philosophy. Now, let me transition from here into attempting to talk about Pesach. I think that one of the differences between, perhaps the key difference in my opinion at this point, between Stoicism's view of freedom and Judaism's idea of freedom has to do with the the context. What is this freedom for? And I've said this before, but I think, in all of my reading of Epictetus, he talks a lot about freedom and making use of impressions and using your judgments to assess what is within your control and what's not within your control. And he talks about freedom being the essence of life, man's essential value. But he doesn't really talk about what you do with that freedom. There's no clear idea I have from my reading of Epictetus about what he thinks you should do with your life. What does give life meaning? And turns out Judaism has a term for this, which is different than the term we use for freedom. On Pesach, we say Zman Cherusenu, the time of our freedom. And the term we use is Cherus. But there's another term called Chofshi or Chofesh. And I'm just going to read an excerpt here from Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks's essay, The Omer and the Politics of Torah. He says, "That is what makes the Torah's approach to freedom so rich and subtle. There's a biblical word for negative freedom, namely chofesh. That is what a person receives when he or she is released from slavery." That's what he means by negative freedom, by the way, meaning removal of the negative. They now no longer have someone ordering them to do this or that. They have become their own masters. That, for the Torah, is a precondition of human dignity. As we saw in an earlier chapter, many institutions of Judaism, from Shabbat to the release of slaves and cancellation of debts in the seventh year and the return of ancestral land in the 50th, are about this kind of freedom, about not being enslaved or indebted to someone else. So that's really what Epictetus's idea of freedom is as well, is freedom from the negative, from being enslaved to false impressions and to other people, being beholden to certain ideas about what is really yours, etc. But that is really not Judaism's idea of freedom. Judaism's idea of freedom, in Judaism's conception of freedom, then that is a first step. That level of freedom is the first step of the removal of oppression and bondage. But true freedom really comes from living as a Tzelem Elohim, living as a truth-seeking human being. And that is really what the entire Torah is geared towards. So I think what emerges from this, as far as we're concerned for a Stoicism Pesach episode, is that I do think that a person cannot fully appreciate the freedom, the true freedom that the Torah gives, unless they first acknowledge the slavery that they're in. And I think that the ideas of Stoicism are instrumental to helping you identify that and to recognize how much we are enslaved by illusions and falsehoods and fantasies. And that aspect of Stoicism aligns very well with Pesach. However, I think that you can't stop there, that you really need to, as we do in Judaism, to go from Pesach to Shavuos, to go from focusing on what it means to be free and redeemed to the final stage, which is the receiving of the Torah and a life of service to Hashem. And I've talked about this before also in previous critiques of Epictetus, which is that Epictetus views the pinnacle of human existence to be one where you are totally free. Judaism, though, does not. Judaism recognizes that free will is a uniquely human characteristic, but the highest ideal, what do we call Moshe? Rabbeinu, we call him Eved Hashem. He is a servant of Hashem. So we are going from, we're being liberated from a slavery to human oppression and to falsehood and to fantasy, but we are subordinating ourselves to the will of the Creator. And experientially, that is going to provide us with happiness and fulfillment and meaning. But if a person were to think that you could live a life of just total freedom, not being subordinate to anything, that's something that Epictetus might really like, but Judaism would look down upon. In fact, the Rambam, it's possible I've quoted this before, but the Rambam in Hilchos Avel, in the Laws of Mourning, chapter 1, halacha 10, is talking about how we don't mourn for people who cast off the yoke of mitzvos and reject Torah. And the way he says it the way he describes these people is he says, Kol ha-porshin midarchei tzibur, all of those who separate from the ways of the community, v'him ha-anashim sheparku ol ha-mitzvos me'al tavaran, and these are the people who cast off the yoke of mitzvos from upon their necks, v'einan nichlalim b'chlal yisrael b'asiyas ha-mitzvos v'kavod ha-mo'ados, and they don't include themselves in the rest of Israel in the doing of mitzvos and the honoring of the festivals, v'yeshivas bati k'nesios bati midrashos, and in sitting in the shuls and the houses of study. And then he says like this, Ela hare hein kach b'nei chorin la'atman. But rather they are free unto themselves, kishar ha'umos, like the rest of the nations. V'chein ha'minim v'hamshumanim v'hamostrein. Same thing with the heretics and the apostates and the informers. So he describes these people as free unto themselves, b'nei chorin la'atman. We hold that being a ben chorin, being free, is a fundamental first step. That's why we celebrate freedom with Pesach, but not free unto yourselves, free so that you can serve Hashem, so that you can use your own free will to serve Hashem. And that's, again, at some point in a person's development, then they hear this for the first time, that the line that Moshe says to Paro is never, let my people go. The line is, let my people go that they may serve Hashem, or that they may bring offerings to him in the wilderness, etc. Every single instance of Moshe asking to Paro to free the people is not just freedom per se, it's so they could be free to serve Hashem. And so I think that this, you know, I guess maybe we'll end off with just saying that I think this concept needs to be thought of. We need to think into this concept and think about its implications, because I think especially those of us who live in America do have this ideal of freedom unto ourselves, freedom to pursue our own happiness and freedom from any form of oppression and attempts to dictate how we should live. But I don't think that's a Jewish idea. I think that fits into Judaism in the sense that it's a means to an end, but the end is not total freedom. And I think we need to contemplate what that means and what its implications are. Okay, well, that's the episode. I'm sure there's much more to say, but I wanted to just get something out there before Pesach. So that is it for today's episode. If you've gained from what you've learned here today, please consider contributing to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/RabbiSchneeweis. Alternatively, if you would like to make a direct contribution to the Rabbi Schneeweis Torah Content Fund, my Venmo is @Matt-Schneeweis, and my Zelle and PayPal are mattschneeweis@gmail.com. Even a small contribution goes a long way to covering the costs of my podcast and will provide me with financial freedom to produce even more Torah content for you. If you would like to sponsor a day's or a week's worth of content, or if you're interested in enlisting my services as a teacher or tutor, you can reach me at rabbischneeweis@gmail.com. And I'll mention that, you know, thank God we've been sponsored every week up until this week. I'm talking about specific sponsorships. Obviously, my patrons on Patreon have really been sponsoring this thing the whole time, but I am looking for sponsors for after Pesach. So if you have a special occasion in mind, or a certain cause, and you would like to contribute, then your contributions will be much appreciated. Thank you to my listeners for listening. Thank you to my readers for reading, and thank you to my supporters for making my efforts Thank you to my supporters for supporting my efforts to make Torah ideas available and accessible to everyone, and everyone have a Chag Kasher V'Sameach.